Good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast. My name is Tom. Good morning. Part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. How we doing? Today is January the 5th. And yeah, feeling pretty good. Hope everyone's doing all right. I think we've all, settled into the new year. I know I've made a few calendar mistakes so far, but I think for some reason I saved a bunch of stuff like a 12-1 instead of a 1-1. It was a little confusing, but I think I'm on board now with 2021. This is the year, right? Everything's going to be, you know, goodbye to 2020, the worst year ever. Good, you know, welcome 2021. This is going to be, you know, the saving grace, and I'm not sure. I'm not sure that 2020 wasn't a better year than it's being made out to be. Now, you know, and I've said this before, you know, besides people dying, and I lost my mom, it's been a year of inconvenience. It's been a year of changing my routine, changing what a regular day is. And, you know, I mean, this is just from me. I've said this before, we're lucky. Somehow I still have a job. I think a lot of people still have jobs, but I know there are people out there struggling. And you know, when it comes to that, yeah, it's a bad year. It's been a bad time. Got a stimulus check in the mail yesterday, right? And I was a little confused on the amount. I'm not even going to say the amount. But I was confused. I just told my wife, put it in our savings, and if somebody wants some back, they'll call us. Let's not spend it. But, you know, thank you, I guess. My biggest challenge, and I think for me, you know, sober, working a program, you know, constantly analyzing myself. That is one of the downsides, I think, of being sober or living a sober life is the constant evaluation I do on myself, sometimes by the minute, sometimes by the hour. You know, there used to be a time where I only checked in once a day, maybe once a week. But, you know, the more I check in, the better I'm doing, da-da-da-da-da-da. And sometimes I find myself just over-analyzing the hell out of myself. And sometimes me doing that makes me look unhappy. So you can't, you know, I can't win for losing. I was just talking to a friend of mine who has been struggling. And he went to rehab. And I was like, wow, that's crazy. But, you know, I was, you know, and he's just a friend of mine that I knew from the program that's clearly not in the program anymore. And he got involved with speed. And I could just, you know, you watch somebody that gets involved with that stuff and they just, you know, first of all, money got stolen. You know, he was fixing up his house and all of a sudden he gave somebody a check and they just disappeared with his money. I mean, just weird shit. And he's like, you know, I can't believe this guy did this to me. And I'm like, dude, if you're going to live in this lifestyle, if you're going to be part of this, this is the shit that happens. You don't take up doing drugs and partying and life just gets better. I mean, he asked if I could give him a ride. He just got a new car. Now his car, it got stolen. I'm like, what? So I had to give him a ride up to, you know, just up the street here. But it's like, you know, when I picked him up, his house is all disarray. He was supposed to get construction done and they stole his money. And it's like, I'm like, dude, you need to just get sober, man. You know, I lived the life of the speed life. It is a fucking mess. Everything used and broken down. You know, every piece of junk picked up with the idea that maybe one day it'll work again or be fixed or just got to clean this up. It's just a tweaker showroom. And all the problems that come along with that life, you know, being ripped off and, you know, in interactions with the cops and getting your car stolen. I mean, he had a brand new car. Now his car's gone. I'm like, where's your car? Had a rental car. That thing got heisted. I mean, it's like, thank you. Thank you for reminding me. You know, I've been talking a bit about my addiction to sugar. And I can't, you know, I have not been doing well with that. I'm not on day whatever. I mean, I did not have any sugar last night, but this weekend, my wife bought cupcakes, and I'm like, I am not eating them damn cupcakes. And then she bought these little cannolis. I'm like, I'm not eating those little cannolis. In the middle of the night, I had a little cannoli, and I had a bowl of Life cereal with almond milk. You know. That's the other tough part about sugar. It's like, how do I define it? You know? But, you know, I just, you know, when I was living that life in that chaos, constantly, you know, shit being stolen, you know, wondering if the cops were around. It's just a terrible lifestyle. And then to see what he's going through, it just reminded me. Because, well, I know what I was going to say. I was, you know, I've been struggling with sugar and you know, I'm not overweight. I'm not ideal. I'm not at an ideal weight. I'm definitely heavier than I'd like to be. And for a moment, I'm like, well, what is if I put like a little bit of meth or something in my coffee every day? Maybe that, you know, just a little bit, just to, you know, focus, maybe lose a little weight. I mean, this is the insanity that goes on in my mind. I'm like, maybe that would work. You know, luckily I've been around doing this long enough. I'm like, that is not going to work. But it's still there. That addiction, it's still hanging out. It'll still be there, you know? I'm grateful that I get to do this podcast. I'm grateful that I have a lot of friends in the program. I'm grateful that I have some friends that aren't and that are struggling, and it's a reminder. I mean, I hate for them, but, you know, I know that... you know, I know that won't work. And you can know, I could tell, like, just asking him, like, where's your car? And, you know, somebody stole it.
My dear, it's been a difficult year. Terrorists don't prey on innocent victims. Trust me, darling. Trust me, darling. It's been a loveless year. I'm a man of three fears. Integrity, faith, and
the fact that when I'm actually it's, and I've shared this before, I'm a drug addict, you know, I am a retired meth head. I mean, when I was out in California, that was the thing we did. We drank, we did other stuff, but the thing we liked doing was speed. And I was deep into it. I mean, I literally couldn't stop. I was adopted into that world. I mean, I, you know, I lived by night, didn't sleep by day, stayed up by day and night, tweaked out, junk in the garage, you know, painting, cleaning, you know, taking things apart, playing darts. I mean, we lived, it was just a gluttonous drug addict lifestyle. And, you know, all the people around me were living the life. People were coming in and out of jail, probation, on the run, you know, getting raided, snitching, you know, carrying radios, listening and scanners on the police. I mean, it was a fucking mess. And I couldn't get out. I literally could not get out of that lifestyle. And I, you know, I shared that I got raided and went to jail and went to a probation camp and up in the Big Bear Mountains. And I was there for 101 days. And I just remember the whole time I was in the probation. I'm like, I'm done. I went to meetings every night. I think, you know, if I'm going to, at the time, I'm like, you know, I want to get sober. I'm going to go to meetings. I'm going to do whatever it takes. But, you know, looking back at it, there was something to getting, you know, when you went to a meeting, you got a little, they called them chronos. They were like blue pieces of paper that you got signed and you kept all your chronos. And then hopefully maybe you might get a court date and you could present all of your hard work, your chronos. Judge, look at all the meetings that I've been to. And the fucked up part is that, you know, inside of my brain, I thought I had a chance. Like a judge hasn't seen this kind of bullshit before. And, you know, I got to go see the judge and ask for early release. I brought all my chronos and he's like, nah, you can just finish your time. You're not doing even that much time considering I got caught with meth, a gun, shotgun that somebody had given to me. Now, I'm not a gun guy. I stuck it in the closet, but the cops found it, tied the two together, said I had a gun with drugs. Made my charge worse. The judge is like, listen, you're not even doing that much time. You can stay in there. And, you know, minding my own, my P's and Q's and you know, getting on the right track. And then I remember I got out and I got high the next day. The next day on speed. I was so stuck. And I couldn't quit. I'm out of jail. Now I'm out of jail. Right now, I am that person that's part of the system, and I shared that my dad had said, "Listen, we're moving to Delaware. You can come with us, or you can stay. But if you stay, you're on your own." And I said, "I gotta go." And they left. You know, before I got out of jail, they came east, and you know, I got out, and I was like, "I'm not getting high." And then next thing you know, my girlfriend and I are getting high, right back into it. And my dad's like, pack up your shit and start driving. And I had all this tweaker bullshit junk that I had collected over the past years of, you know, furniture and old bikes and old stereo equipment, speakers, wire, cables, boxes, cabinets, just tons of junk. And I loaded all of it up in a U-Haul. I mean, it took me like 3 weeks. 3 weeks of procrastinating and dragging my feet and being high and you know, my dad gave me money to drive across the country. I think I'm spending it on speed. I mean, I don't even know. And I had all the right intentions. There was no way I needed to. I was leaving and nothing was going to stop me. And if it wasn't for my dad calling me, Tommy, get the shit in the truck and start driving, God damn it. If it wasn't for my dad forcing me to get out of San Diego. And I tell you, we drove across the United States on meth. Tweaking. I mean, we'd have never made it. And we got stuck in Tennessee, and we ran out of meth, and we couldn't make it. We were done. I couldn't drive anymore. I was sick. You know, not like heroin, but, you know, I was sleepy. And we had to call my friend in San Diego, and she sent us some more dope out to Tennessee, out to Bristol. And we're sitting in a hotel room, and then we get this UPS package, and it's more speed, and we use it, and boom, we're up and running. And we got here, and luckily, speed wasn't around. Hadn't gotten this far. You know, on the West Coast, in San Diego, I think it's where, you know, it's not where it was born, but it definitely was breeding big time down in Southern California. And down in Mexico, you know, all that. Ephedrine came out of Mexico. It was a mess. But the meth hadn't reached us yet. And so there was no meth, thank God, or I would have slid right into the meth. Slid right back into it. But what did I do? I swapped out meth for alcohol. And then I started drinking like I was doing meth. And I used to do a lot of meth. And it wouldn't take long. You know, not drinking like that. Started putting on weight. Wasn't on, you know, I was a skinny kid. I was, you know, I was a skinny young adult. Felt great. I mean, I didn't, you know, I was tweaking, but, you know, my body, I felt like it was in, you know, I like wore 29s. I think I was like skinny and I thought I looked fantastic. But I took that meth away and I started putting on weight, eating, drinking, just gluttonous, blah, 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 and just got disgusting. And that happened. I mean, I moved here in 94, and from 94, from February of 94, all of 94, all of 95, all of 96, I drank for 3 years like a, you know, like a wino, but it was vodka, and it was every night, and, you know, I got heavy and bloated, and March 31st, 1997, I finally got punched in the face. And it wasn't, you know, all of that story, you would think that would be a great reason to get sober. But no, one punch to the face, one split lip, and that was enough to bust my pride and bust my ego and bust that self-centered bullshit open enough, humiliate me enough that I had a second of clarity. And luckily, Ron M. was right there in the BB Hospital and, you know, all the things that happened, luckily. But that, you know, all the things fell in place that I was able to get out, at least for today, right? And I won't get into, you know, I've shared this whole story, but my point is that if, well, and meth is around here now, and, but luckily, and I was talking to my wife about this, you know, I love being sober. I love it. I'm not afraid of meth anymore. I'm not afraid of drinking. I respect it. I know where its place, and it's not in my life. And that's fine. I know all the things that I need to do. You know, my son, you know, the other challenging thing is kids these days. And if you have a kids that are anywhere in the 5 to 15 range, they're probably on computers or electronics, and they're probably playing games that, you know, could be, the progress could move further along if money was applied. And, you know, my kids got, you know, a bunch of cash and stuff for Christmas, and, you know, I let them spend a little bit of money on their games, but they would spend all of it. And my son goes, "Would you let me buy something for $100 on one of my games?" I'm like, "Hell no. Hell no." And that was that. And then later on last night, he's like, "You know, would you reconsider?" And I go, "Sam, I tell you what. I go, come to me Wednesday and talk to me about it, and we'll look and see what, you know, we'll look into it. But, you know, you're just..." And what my thinking behind it was, you know, I just don't go on my first thought, because I'm like that. You know, I get excited about something, I do it, and then a couple of days later, I'm like, I probably didn't really need that. I said, "Sam, talk to me about it on Wednesday and see if you're still as excited about it." And this was something that I was taught when I first got sober is, you know, don't go on your first thought. Go on your second, you know, because it's the first thought that gets you drunk. And you know, or get you broke, or get you in jail, or whatever it is. So I thought that was kind of funny. And you know, I'm trying to use some of the things that I've learned in this program to raise my kids, because right now, that is one of the biggest issues that I'm having in my life right now, is just this, the kids. You know, you just, there's nothing to do. There's nothing for them to do. There's nowhere to go. It's cold out. You know, it's just constantly thinking, I know what they should be doing. I know what I was doing as a kid. And then I know what we have to offer nowadays. And it isn't much. And it's sad because they end up being on electronics. You know, we have to stop. We have to, you know, no electronics from this period or this time to this time. And Sam's like, well, does that include Netflix? I'm like, yes. Well, not on your iPad, because we've been watching Glee, and we actually have been enjoying it. Let me see here. Let's see what we can read. I got to go to work. Okay. December, or no, January. See, I almost did it again. January 5th, total acceptance. He cannot picture life without alcohol. Some days he will be unable to imagine life either with alcohol or without it. Then he will know loneliness such as few do. He will be at the line jumping off place. He will wish for the end. That's how I was. That is exactly how I was. I couldn't imagine my life with it. I couldn't imagine my life without it. I had nothing. And I remember calling the AA hotline with the crossbow thing to my head, thinking I'm going to shoot myself in the head with this little arrow. That's the jumping off point. Only an alcoholic can understand the exact meaning of a statement like this one. The double standard that held me captive as an active alcoholic also filled me with terror and confusion. If I don't get a drink, I'm going to die. Competed with, if I continue drinking, it's going to kill me. Pushed me over, oh wait a minute. Both compulsive thoughts pushed me ever closer to the bottom. The bottom produced a total acceptance of my alcoholism, with no reservations whatsoever, and one that was absolutely essential for my recovery. It was a dilemma unlike anything I had ever faced. But as I found out later, a necessary one if I was to succeed in this program. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like everything. You know, you have to surrender to everything. You know, you have to surrender. I've had to surrender the fact that I can't drink. I've had to surrender the fact that I can't do meth. I've had to surrender to the fact that I'm a parent with kids. You know, that's my job. If I do not surrender and I keep one foot in the idea that I can and one foot in the idea that I can't, it is miserable. Miserable. I feel bad for the people that think they're going to come into a program and be taught how to drink. Miserable. Surrendering is the key. We've been watching The Bridgertons. I don't know if I said this the other day, but they talk about people, you know, going, you know, the sin of pride. I mean, the sin of pride, I mean, that is self. And the surrendering of self to these issues is the first step in working out these issues. You got to give up. You got to give up the fight, and you got to be honest with yourself. And if the honest answer isn't the one that everybody would like to hear, you just have to say it. At least understand. You know, I talk about how, you know, I miss drinking. I missed using meth. We had a lot of damn fun. But the chaos that came after it was not worth it. And then I've worked way too hard. Way too hard. I'm so lucky to have the life I have, and then to see my buddy who's struggling right now because he got caught up in that shit. I'm like, there is no way I would ever want this. And it's come to me. You know, like the other day, maybe you could put a little in coffee. I remember when I was doing meth and selling meth, and I would have, you know, there'd be people, and they just put it in their coffee. They weren't smoking or snorting. They put it in their coffee, and that was how they, you know, got their dose or whatever. You know, I thought, well, maybe that would work for me. No, it won't. Stop it. It will not work for you, and it'll never work for you. How's ever? Am I making any sense? Does anybody else struggle with this stuff? You know, these, you know, they always say, you know, your addiction's always in the corner doing push-ups. You know, there's one that I'm struggling with lately is the damn sugar, and you know, it's hard to get upset at sugar. It's hard to get mad at it. But it is what it is, and I hate it. Donuts don't get you put in jail. Hey, I gotta go. I gotta go work. I hope everyone's having a great day. Send me a shout out. You got something you want to talk about? I was talking to my wife last night about that first step. You know, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable to everybody else. We were watching somebody on TV and, my wife at her job, you know, lately there's like been homeless people kind of showing up and hanging out and it's always nice to help. Unfortunately, the help is what sometimes keeps people in it. I know it did that way. It was that way for my brother for a long time. You know, my dad's parents kept helping him. And, the person that's struggling keeps lowering their, you know, standards. You know, if I looked at my standards today, what do I expect? You know, a nice house or a house, a place to live, heat, electricity, you know, bills being paid, food. But when you start to use, you're like, well, maybe I don't really need a house. Maybe I don't really need my family. You start chipping away at your expectations in life, your wants, your the things that you think you should have or you've deserved or worked for. And in the very end, you end up with nothing and you're almost okay with it. You know, I remember my brother. I'm like, Todd, you have got to. Actually, I didn't talk to my brother. I talked to my dad. I'm like, you have to let him go. He will keep lowering his expectations and of himself as long as he's getting away with doing what he's doing. I mean, in the end, you end up with nothing, living nowhere, maybe in a shelter or you're homeless or in the woods, and it's almost okay. And that's, you know, that's bad. So, I don't know. Hang in there. We'll keep working on it. All my dreams never mean one thing.